Welcome, everybody, to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. I'm so excited to share the stories of these individuals, their stories of triumph and encouragement and inspiration to move through some really challenging things in their lives, whether it is learning to read or even just graduating from school, getting a job, being able to find their strengths that they have within them to be successful. And absolutely, I want to foster an understanding that their success is not in spite of their dyslexia, but it is because of it. And so I'm so glad to have you listening to these stories today. Hey, this is Christine, the host of Dyslexically Successful, and as I'm starting to get guests signed up for future interviews, I thought I would take the time to just explain what I'm trying to do with this podcast. So in 2019, I ran a podcast called Healthcare Advocacy Podcast, and during the year, I did about 27 interviews with a variety of healthcare professionals, of patients and of teachers, of parents. And it was a really great time to just explore and see how we can come together as a community to just overall better our healthcare system. Well, as I thought about my purpose of the podcast and what I really am passionate about, it came down to dyslexia and dyslexia awareness. And so I changed the title of my podcast to be Dyslexically Successful because that's actually a presentation that I've put on now 3 times in the Metro Denver area. And in that presentation, we have a panel of 4 to 5 different dyslexic learners. Most of them are adults, but we have had some students as well who share their stories and what they've done to overcome their challenges and where they are having success in their life. And it just shows that even for people who may not be able to read or may not be able to read well, that you can still overcome that challenge and go on to have a lot of success. And then it's much more about your mindset. It's much more about your perseverance and your gumption than it is about how well you can read. And I just really wanted to highlight people who have made choices in their lives, even if the odds were stacked against them, that they had a passion, they had a purpose to drive themselves forward toward a path of success. And that path absolutely was not a straight line. It was probably circular, maybe going back on itself a few times. But in the end, the people who are featured on the panel have all had great success in their lives or are moving toward their vision, their passion, and are feeling successful, even though people in an earlier part of their lives have had told them that they would not be able to succeed or they would not be able to do X, Y, or Z because of their dyslexia. So I just really want to make sure that we do not set limits. We don't set artificial limits on ourselves. Whether you are someone who has a diagnosis of dyslexia or perhaps ADD or perhaps autism, that we understand it is not about changing our environment so that we, or I should say, it's not about changing ourselves so that we fit into our environment, but rather changing the environment to help best support the way we learn. So like in the case of school, I was actually quite fortunate. I did not receive a dyslexia diagnosis while I was in grade school or at any time, actually. I was not diagnosed with dyslexia until I was 36, when my first son was diagnosed with dyslexia. I then realized some of the symptoms that they listed sounded a whole lot like me and gave me an understanding as to why I struggled as much as I did in high school and especially in college, particularly since things kind of seemed easy in grade school and I did extremely well in grade school. And yet there were always these things in the back of my head, lots of anxiety, and that anxiety manifested itself for me throughout high school and into college as well, especially as I started having the challenges with the coursework. But in grade school, I was fortunate because I evidently scored high enough on the standardized test that when they group you into different reading programs in school, as they did in the 80s and do continue to do now, I was in the top level, which I find hilarious because I don't like reading, and I didn't like reading even then. I did read the assignments in class, but I can clearly remember a contest where you were supposed to read books and then take quizzes on the computer, and whoever had the most points could win different prizes that the school had. One of them being was an overnight sleepover in the library with you and 8 of your friends, and that was so important to me that I just took a bunch of tests, and I didn't read maybe more than 2 or 3 of the books. I just took the test and guessed correctly on the multiple choice questions, and I ended up winning that sleepover for me and 8 of my friends. So I didn't read any of those books. I maybe read a handful of pages of Watership Down, a handful of pages of A Wrinkle in Time, and then I blame it on my ADD. I get bored with the book and I put it down. Of course, I can also go into hyperfocus, but that's neither here nor there. But so here I was in this top reading group, but not able to read. In the 4th grade, I clearly recall having my mother read Sounder to me. And I guess I just told her that I needed some help, or I don't know. I don't remember what I told her, but it didn't seem odd at all that she had to read it to me, and that's what happened. But in that top level, they pulled you out and you did a lot of project-based learning. And so Mrs. Thomason, she was fantastic for that. She was fantastic for getting us to use our creative minds and for us to think outside the box and for us to do these projects and write stories. And I loved all of that. So I thrived in that environment, and that challenge for me was great. And I guess, when it came into harder grades for English, I did keep up with the reading for sure. I know I had to read the books multiple times or passages multiple times, but again, dyslexia was not a word that I even knew at that time or really even clearly understood, as is the case for many people even today. The word dyslexia is a misunderstood word. But the harder part for me was history, understanding and remembering historical dates and figures and timelines. They all seemed the same. Everybody in the historical timeline seemed like they had the same story, and I had a really, really difficult time recalling that. And I think that goes to show just, you know, how similar the challenges can be depending on which of the subtypes of dyslexia you have. Phonemic awareness is definitely my weakest area, and that reared its head as well in English, pronouncing new words, and especially in Spanish. So depending on which subtype of dyslexia you have, you're going to struggle in different areas. And that's really important because in order to best help support our children, we need to know exactly what is going on. So it's not just the fact that it's dyslexia, or you may even be uncertain if it is, because maybe they're just poor spellers, or maybe they love to read, but they don't have comprehension, or it takes them twice as long to do assignments, or they know the new information one day and then they forget it the next day or perhaps the next hour. And, you know, all of those things can be teased out and looked at and worked on specifically. You know, for me, my orthographic memory is pretty good, particularly if I can hear all of the sounds in a word. I can kind of use a mental picture of what that word looks like and be able to spell it. Now, if I can't hear all of the sounds in the word, like in the word beautiful or plateau, my orthographic mapping is not very good of what that word looks like. And I have learned now at 42 and a half that one of the strategies I can use to help me spell that word correctly, other than spell checker, is to use a mnemonic device or to use some sort of analogy. So one of the tricks for spelling is to kind of think of a pattern that you can, or tell yourself a story. So if we're spelling the word beautiful, I know that the B is first, and then I picture elephant, ant, unicorn. So the elephant's really big, followed by the ant is really small, followed by the unicorn that's a magical creature. So in my head, that makes sense. Every time I spell the word beautiful, I have to think about that elephant, ant, unicorn, and that's how I spell the word. Funny story for the word beautiful, that was the third grade spelling word that I got kicked out of the spelling bee for, Mrs. Catero. I still feel very dumb about that, but now I can spell the word beautiful. So, you know, as we move through this podcast, we'll be bringing stories to you, of different successful dyslexic learners. And additionally, I'll add in another little segment about ways to help your child right now. Some little tips or tricks of the day. I haven't thought of the name for that segment yet. So if you are listening to this and you would like to offer suggestions, maybe I'll choose yours. So either go ahead and put that in the comments, write a review and put that in the comments, or feel free to email me. You can email me at info@sweetpeapediatricwellness.com. Again, that is info@sweetpeapediatricwellness.com. And I will think about that for a few weeks and then pick a name for the segment. That segment is going to feature a couple of tips or tricks that you can, as a dyslexic learner, use for spelling or for learning how to read tricky words, or just some little tips and tricks like that. So, all right. Yeah, so that's a little bit about me and my dyslexia story. You know, I was always the child who talked too loud, too fast, and I had no awareness of that. And even now, to this day, I have to still be very conscious of the rate of speech I'm using, how loud I'm talking in any particular situation, because that does not come easy for me to modulate that. And some may blame that on my Italian heritage from Chicago. Others maybe know that that doesn't necessarily make a difference, that there's something behind that, specifically my dyslexia and the ADD. So when we do have a dyslexic learner, on average, it's been shown that about 50% of dyslexic learners also do have symptoms of attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So it's not a for sure thing, but there is a comorbidity there. And now, as I move into my career as a physical therapist, and I do work with pediatrics on a daily basis, I'm taking more continuing education classes on primary reflex integration and understanding how neural development of our brain, which begins in utero, actually plays a role in developing some of these learning challenges. So even before we get to the point where the connections are being made in the brain, the ability to successfully integrate a reflex is embedded in our genes. So that will be a whole separate topic to talk about, but if you're interested in neuroscience or neurodevelopment, we'll be touching on that in this podcast as well. So I'm going to wrap up this segment here, and then we'll move on to a little tip or trick for the day. And our first scheduled podcast is going to be coming up here in a couple of weeks, and we're going to have Chris Riley, who is an entrepreneur, but he currently works as a coder for a different company. So for all those tech people out there, stay tuned for Chris's episode. We'll have another episode coming up with Zach. He is a college student and also a dyslexic learner who has great aspirations for himself, and he's on a wonderful path to achieve all of his goals. And such an inspiring story. So if you would like to share your story, or you know someone who would like to share your story, please reach out to me. Again, you can reach out to me at info@sweetpeapediatricwellness.com, or in the show notes, I will also have a link to the Sign Up Genius, where you can just go ahead and sign up on for an interview spot straight away. So, all right then. Thank you so much. My tip for today is, when teaching vowel sounds, start with the most common vowel sound and go from there. So if you're going to be teaching someone to read, we're going to start with short vowels only and not confuse the short vowels and the long vowels at the same time. And it's actually much, much, much more important that they understand what the symbol is and then the sound that the letter makes. It's not as important to know the actual letter name. So if you're teaching the letter A, that's fine. They may know the letters of the alphabet. They may not. But it's much more important that they understand that that symbol for the letter A goes with the sound A. And you can make up a word that would make sense for them that they can kind of visualize when they see that letter. So apple is a really easy one for A, because you can actually like embed on the letter A a little apple I tend to draw the letter A in red and I add a little green stem. So this is where what we would consider a multisensory approach. We can make up a little story about the letter A. Most recently, I have been working with a student on some tutoring, and he knows that the letter A says A, but he's not very proficient at the letter names. And that is the next part that we're working on, is that each letter does have a name and has the sound. So now that he has the sounds very well, we're moving on to the letter names. And so I've, you know, worked on with him making this little drawing of the letter A that's playing outside in the daytime. And so in the little sentence that I made up, I used as many long A sounds, not for the sake of him knowing that the letter A sometimes says a long A sound, but more that he could hear that A and see that the letter A looks like this. We talked about the apple. The apple is our keyword. We already worked on that. He has a good, strong foundation for what the sound of the letter is, but now we're working on the name of the letter. And so the apple plays outside in the daytime, and when I say that sentence, he can quickly pull it up then that that letter name is A. I'll just share one more with you, the letter E. He has a hard time remembering that the letter E is named E, and so he chose the word elephant to be his keyword. He really likes elephant as his keyword, so he knows that the letter E is going to say eh, and but cannot remember that letter name. So I drew a little picture of an elephant peeing, and so he just loves it. And now after two sessions of kind of reinforcing that, he is telling me the letter sound and the letter name, you know, much more quickly and with much more accuracy. So just a couple of points there, kind of what's going to grab your student's attention, what's going to grab your child's attention, and make it different and unique, because our brains do think differently and we hold on to really unique, novel pieces of information that make sense to us. So, and for this particular boy, the keyword for the letter E is not typically elephant, but that other word didn't make any sense to him, and elephant did. So I'm going to stick with what works for him and build on what he already knows. And we would do the same thing for any child, but when we're working with a dyslexic learner, we just have to do it a lot more. They just need a lot more unconventional conventions along the way, and drawing pictures and using as much of their creative side as possible to help reinforce and drive it home. Some of these concepts that may not be very easy for them at first can be quite helpful. So that's my tip for the day. Start with your short vowel sounds, and make sure that they have a keyword and that they're visualizing what that keyword is. When it is time for them to remember the letter name, some of them might get it right away. Others might need a little bit more help, and use your creativity as a parent or a tutor to find that best fit for them. So, all right.